Theatre Royal. The very name summons up something of grandeur and eloquence, and it was. Hosted by Ralph Richardson, these big-name productions also included the creme de la creme of acting talent, from John Gielgud, Robert Morley and Orson Welles, to Trevor Howard, Michael Redgrave and Laurence Olivier. They were based on works by the world's leading authors, among them Charles Dickens, Henry James, Oscar Wilde and Anton Chekhov. These are but a few of whose company we shall be keeping as we raise the curtain on our first instalment of theatrical history.
The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribed, Sir Ralph Richardson in Theatre Royal.
This is Ralph Richardson. Our play today is based on a story by Henry James. Henry James, one of America's greatest writers, though born in America, spent a great deal of his life abroad, and his stories, like this one, are often set in Europe. A successful novelist, Henry James had a lifelong ambition to achieve equal success as a playwright. During his lifetime, he failed. But perversely, since then, several of his tales have been dramatized by other hands into successful plays. You might perhaps recall that I myself appeared in a film version of one of those stories called The Heiress. But now we present to you our adaptation of another work by Henry James, The Aspen Papers. The world has long recognized Geoffrey Aspen for what he was, perhaps the greatest of American poets. But I still think it was the English critic John Cumnor and I who had recognized him the most. Our edition of his collected works had not merely been definitive, it had been a landmark in literary history. Geoffrey Aspen had died young. In that, he resembled Byron, whom he resembled in many ways, and whose death had occurred at almost the same date. So that when I first heard that Juliana Bordereau was still alive in Venice, it was almost as if I had heard of the survival of Lady Hamilton. But it was not her memories of the poet that interested me. It was the rumor that she still had in her keeping the letters and the literary papers which Aspen had left to her when he died.
But all this fuss about a few old letters and papers, one would think they contained the answer to the riddle of the universe.
My dear lady, if I had to choose between that precious solution and a bundle of Geoffrey Aspen's letters, I know which would appear to me the greater boon.
Geoffrey Aspen. Oh, after all, he was a good poet, but
one doesn't defend one's God. One's God is in himself a defense.
But what makes you think that she won't let you see the papers? Have you asked her?
My dear lady, as I happen to know, the old woman won't have her relics or tokens so much as spoken of. They're personal, delicate, intimate.
But how do you know that?
James Cumnor wrote to her more than once. At last he had a reply, presumably dictated to her niece. Miss Bordereau has none of Mr. Aspen's literary remains, and if she had, she wouldn't have dreamt of showing them to anyone.
Then why all this trouble if she hasn't any papers?
But of course she has. You can see that from her reply, calling him Mr. Aspen. One doesn't talk about Mr. Shakespeare. Mr. Aspen proves familiarity, and familiarity implies possession of mementos, of tangible objects. As a literary critic, used to the finer shades of meaning, I can't tell you how that mister affects me. It bridges a gulf of 70 years.
Gracious, can she be as old as all that? Over 90?
But she must be. It's 70 years since Geoffrey Aspen died.
But if she refuses to part with the papers...
I must get round her somehow by ingratiating diplomatic arts, hypocrisy, duplicity, my only chance. I'm sorry for it.